Did everyone see Andrea's note in the chat? She's having some technical difficulties. She said, I'll be back if I get disconnected. So sounds like she is there. Hello, Andrea.
Yeah, I don't see her and I don't see the chat.
She sent it to everyone.
Maybe I wasn't on quite yet. But,
okay.
There she is. Okay.
Hey guys, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Yes.
Okay. I don't have video, but I hopefully this will work for at least the audio.
Sounds you're coming through loud and clear.
Yeah, your audio is great, Andrea.
Good. I can see the video. I'm actually at my office, and I don't have a webcam here. So I can see your screen, and I can hear you.
Perfect. All right. Well, I have 3:30. It's October the 13th. This is the Des Moines Water Works Finance and Audit Committee. We have a couple of things on this agenda. Looks like we're starting with corporate insurance renewals, correct, Ted?
That is correct, Graham.
How would you like to proceed?
Well, let me just cue it up, and then I think Jack is here. I see some phone numbers and things, but we'll kick it off. This is kind of our annual review of corporate insurance, almost $1.5 million book of business for the waterworks every year. Pretty comparable from year to year. A couple of interesting points you want to keep an ear open for here as we go through. Our typical cover or carrier, Cincinnati, had originally declined when we went to them this year. They originally declined to provide flood insurance, which obviously is very important for Des Moines Water Works. And so we're looking into that. It's kind of a developing situation right now. We'll be interested to hear how that goes. And then the other thing of specific note, I think, is you'll recall that last year we increased our cyber liability coverage from $1 million to $5 million on our way to potentially $10 million as a good target for cyber liability. And the recommendation, I believe, will be to go to $10 million this year, given favorable rates. So with those couple of teasers, I guess I'll turn it over to Jack. Are you there, Jack?
I sure am, Ted. Hey, thanks for that. And can you guys hear me okay? I've got no video today too, but strictly audio.
We can hear you loud and clear.
Terrific. Well, thanks for the introduction, and appreciate you guys having us on the agenda. You know, Waterworks has been a fantastic partner for LMC. We've really enjoyed working with the team over there for a number of years. Formal congratulations to you too as well, Ted. I haven't had a chance to talk to you. I know we exchanged some emails, but well deserved in moving into the role as well. So
thank you.
No problem. So you really you did a great job of covering some of the highlights of this. I'll start with just giving you guys a brief overview of the commercial insurance marketplace right now. I'm not sure if you've read or seen anything about it, but we're going through what's called a hard market in the commercial insurance sector right now. And quite frankly, this has been the first time that we've gone through a hard market in approximately 16 to 17 years. And it's been a long time coming. It seems like you can't flip on the news anymore without hearing about a natural disaster, whether it be wildfires or running out of names for hurricanes or a landlocked hurricane here in Iowa. It's just been very, very brutal when it comes to property insurance, as well as some of the other lines of coverage. I was just recently in a CE seminar that talked a little bit about Iowa and the losses from a property perspective over the course of 2 years, not including this current year. And Iowa's had in excess of $2 billion worth of property losses over the past 2 years. And this year with derecho, it's going to far exceed that. So it's been a pretty powerful blow to insurance companies from a property perspective. You pair that with COVID-19 causing some market disruption in terms of investments and so forth, and it really did speed things up as far as insurance, the insurance marketplace hardening up. But with that said, the program over at Waterworks, from a pricing standpoint, was actually very competitive. We did get terms from Cincinnati Insurance. Ted, you did touch on one of the major components on it. The Cincinnati Property Casualty Program was pretty darn close to flat. It was a slight increase tied to just some increase in exposures, but the main component was, as most insurance companies are doing right now, they're reviewing their capacity when it comes to limits. And in this particular situation, it was tied to flood. And so the Des Moines Waterworks program had a limit of $10 million on certain locations and $5 million on others on the Cincinnati program. So Cincinnati had initially wanted to back off offering coverage from that perspective, which really forced us out in the marketplace. And so we've been searching for coverage and still and have some updates to share with you guys as well, too. But we've been searching for coverage from the private market sector. It's been a little more challenging to secure the coverage this year due to the marketplace being a hardened marketplace. With that being said, we have approached all of our private flood insurance markets, and we are working through some solutions there. We'd also talked to several other property carriers, one of which was our former carrier Travelers, who had the same issue as Cincinnati in terms of their willingness to offer flood, as well as a couple other monoline markets from a flood perspective. However, we did approach ICAP, which is a program for municipalities, and they would be willing to offer flood. We are going through the process with them now at this point. We have cleared reinsurance with them, so everything has been approved from that perspective. They are currently in the process of rating it, and we should have some rough indications from ICAP by Wednesday as to what their program looks like. But again, they will include flood within the program. The other part of the development, so Cincinnati has been a good partner for us, and we did push them pretty hard and let them know that we would be exploring the marketplace in terms of trying to secure coverage for Waterworks and to replace that flood limit. And they did agree to post up a limit for flood. We did just get back in some terms just literally moments ago, which we have not had a chance to review, but verbally they did agree to go up to $1 million on the flood, which definitely helps. But we will go through those line by line to see what they're offering for flood terms and get back to you on that, because that will definitely help if they're able to put up a limit. I don't have a concern,
Jack,
in terms of finding. Yep, yep.
Can I jump in for one quick second? We have most recently from Cincinnati, they're offering $1 million on some of the most high risk. Locations, but they are giving us $5 and $10 million at some of the lower risk locations like they had previously. So that just came in.
And it looks, yep, it literally came in about 10 minutes ago.
yeah.
And it appears that it's around $26,000 roughly, Lindsay, yep, on there to do that difference. So this could very well have solved our problem in terms of the initial blow that we had there.
Yep, because ICAP, their position was not to offer any flood on Zone A, and here we have from Cincinnati giving us $1 million on those locations. So if I'm reading this correct, which we just got.
So more to come on that, guys, once we actually formally cut through it. And we will also have more information on ICAP. But with Cincinnati being willing to post up some limits here, if we need to buy up, depending on how the terms look here, we certainly have the opportunity to do that. All in all, the good news is the renewal actually came in below market, despite the fact that we're in a hard marketplace right now. So we've got a little bit, we've got a few moving parts still as we go through this. Typically, we like to have this buttoned up by this point. The challenge has been really the market itself causing some delays. But once we have a little bit more formal updates on a couple of these items, we will get back to both Peggy and Donna to circle back with the committee so you guys have a little bit more information on the picture as it stands. The other piece that I did want to touch on that Ted mentioned as well too was the cyber liability. So we did, when we initially had talked about cyber liability, that was an item that we were looking at increasing incrementally over time, was my recommendation. We have since done that. We do purchase a $5 million limit, and we did get an indication to look at purchasing an additional $5 million, and the range is going to be anywhere from $18,000 to $20,000. My recommendation to the group was to, I guess, once we evaluate the flood scenario, if it falls within budget, timing is good to continue to purchase up on the flood or on the cyber piece. Despite the market conditions being hard on the property casualty piece, on the cyber piece, it's still relatively competitive. And this is, even though the fact that they're seeing more claims, there's been a little bit of a lag for it to catch up with that market segment. There's been a lot of folks obviously working virtually right now, and the exposure is up higher. I see it continue to go higher as we move into the next year. So timing would be good to look at this, but it all depends on our final numbers when we look at the property casualty side. If it falls within budget, it would be my recommendation to continue to layer up on there. If the board decides not to do that, it's not a make or break scenario. However, timing would be pretty good to do that, because I foresee the marketplace with cyber to harden up here over the next year moving forward, just with the remote work environment that we've had. So with that, that's kind of the high-level overview on the commercial insurance marketplace, Board of Waterworks insurance program. I am glad to address any specific questions if anybody were to have any, or if there are any topics that you would like for me to address at this point. But as a follow-up to this call, we will plan on circling back with the finance team, both Donna and Peggy, to talk a little bit more about the terms that we have from Cincinnati, and also as we continue to go down the path with ICAP and other options to find to identify what the best opportunity for Des Moines Waterworks is.
I believe that Michelle sent out the complete list of all the coverages that we have with all the limits, comparing this year to next. If anybody has any questions about any of those coverages or limits, this would be a great time to ask Jack or Lindsay for input.
No, but Graham, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, we wouldn't have to have this until our board meeting 2 weeks from today. So, I mean, keep doing your work, Lindsay. If you get another email and something looks better, that's great.
Yeah, I was pleased to get that email from Cincinnati just a few minutes ago.
And so that's the goal, right, Ted? Just to restate what Sue said, that we'd have this in 2 weeks at the board meeting.
That's exactly right, Graham. This was intended to be kind of the overview. We were hopeful that we'd have everything. Don't quite, but we will have it all, and we will bring the package to the board for approval on the 27th. Yeah, 27th, 2 weeks from today.
And can I just add, I would concur with Jack's recommendation that provided that we can secure our property and casualty piece, you know, at a reasonable price, i.e. not going a lot over what we budgeted, to buy up on the cyber insurance while we have the opportunity at a good rate. You know, there's, Jack talked us through it last year as far as You know, there's no way, there's no precise number that they can say, here's how much coverage you need to have. But based off of the research they did, Jack recommended that we, over time and dollars allowed, move that coverage up. And so I was a bit surprised, frankly, we all hear so much about, you know, cyber events, et cetera, to find that the premiums were still pretty good. So I'm no insurance expert. I'm relying on Jack for that. But I would say take it while we can get it.
I have a feeling that it's definitely going to be a different picture as we move forward. The remote work environment's been the big key. You know, we've been a lot more vulnerable. I could tell you just from my office as a whole, in the West Des Moines location, for example, we've got about 120 employees that work out of that location. And at any given time, we've got about 10 people in the office. So it's a little bit of a different workplace dynamic than it's been in the past. So I would agree. Next year and years to follow are gonna firm up on the cyber sector.
Very good. Go ahead.
Sorry, Ted, go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna close that one out by saying we will follow up on the flood and we'll bring it. If we hear anything different than we expect, we'll certainly communicate that to the board. Otherwise, we'll be back in 2 weeks with a full package and request approval.
Great. All right, so moving on to proposed water rates, I believe, number two.
Yes, we have talked about water rates a number of times over the last several months, including a couple of presentations from Raftellus related to cost of service and rate design. And staff has reviewed all of that information, been through the calculations, and we're prepared today to share some thoughts and a recommendation with the board. And Peggy is going to walk us through that, and I will let her take it from there.
All right. First question everyone asks is, can you see my screen?
Yes, we can see.
Okay. Because you can't quite tell for sure whether it's, and I've had one inadvertent instance of having the wrong thing up. So, reminder, as long as we're talking about the board meeting, that board action on rate increases does occur at the October meeting every year. So in 2 weeks, we'll be looking for approval of 2021 rates to go into effect April 1, 2021. So today I'll walk through what our recommendations are. I'm going to start with wholesale water rates. You know, we've talked an awful lot about wholesale water rates on multiple occasions this year. Hopefully you've all been as interested and exciting to talk about wholesale water rates as I have each time we've talked about it. Maybe not. As a reminder to set the stage, the cost of service model that Raftellus developed for Des Moines Water Works shows that we're under collecting revenue from the purchase capacity class and over collecting revenue from the with storage class. And we want to move toward full cost recovery from the purchase capacity customers so that they're covering all of their costs. Now, that said, we don't necessarily think that it's appropriate to do that in 1 year. Based on estimating 5% annual increases in the operating budget out for several years, we estimate that we will need rate increases of 12 to 15% for 3 years, 2021, 22, and 23, to get the purchase capacity class for their revenue to align with their costs. In other words, that they're 100% cost recovery. As I said, we've talked about rates a lot this year, and you know, most of that discussion has been about revising the wholesale rate structure. When we began working with Raftellus several years ago, you know, even though we engaged them initially for the cost of service and rates are very closely linked. And so they looked at everything. And immediately they hit upon the fact that if purchase capacity customers don't buy any water from us, they don't pay anything. And Raftellis found that to be a very unusual arrangement. You know, they said to us, this was Tom Beckley lecturing us, frankly, if you build capacity for customers, they need to at least pay something for that because there's fixed cost to maintain that capacity. It doesn't matter that those customers made upfront capital contributions to build that infrastructure, they still need to pay something for the cost of maintaining it, whether they're using water or not. And so they suggested revising the wholesale rate structure. Internally, we talked and a little bit with the board, and we liked the idea. Especially, we began to like it even more, frankly, as some of our customers began to explore building their own treatment facilities, going off on their own. If they would do that and stop buying water from us, we would have stranded assets that we had no way to collect revenue on at all. And in particular, we wouldn't even be covering the cost of maintaining, the capital cost to maintain those. So we, as I said, worked with Raftellis throughout this year to develop a rate structure. And when I say we, I'm sure you remember, you know, that's not just staff. Raftellis presented a couple of times to the Finance and Audit Committee, including leading a work session and walking us through various options, et cetera. Aside from that, staff and Diane worked with Raftellis, had a number of meetings to figure out what other options we would have for a wholesale rate structure. What we settled on was a, and you know, there's lots of options out there, but what Raftellis keyed in on was a structure that had a higher fixed component based on each customer's peak demand. And that amount would be calculated as an annual fee, but divided up on a monthly basis. So they would pay that each month and then still have the volume rate like we have today on top of that. And so that would at least ensure that customers pay the costs associated with maintaining the capital assets, even if they don't purchase water. So, and would protect us in the future if customers chose not to buy water from us any longer. And now I'm going to tell you that we actually recommend deferring the implementation of that into 2022. And I'm guessing you're saying why. And we've had a lot of conversations about this internally, but you know, frankly, you are well aware that the wholesale customers have been pretty concerned about this change in structure. They've even questioned whether we have the authority to do it. Now, we believe that we have the authority to do it. Legal counsel believes we have authority to do it. And we've had a lot of discussion, staff, with the board about that. And so I think we're on pretty firm footing there. However, bottom line is they're a bit riled up. And regionalization talks have resumed. And I believe, even though I'm not necessarily a part of those discussions, everyone, the general consensus is that those discussions are going very well. And we feel that we would be better served if we wait to delay if we delay implementing a change in the rate structure. If regionalization moves forward, the change likely becomes unnecessary because Des Moines Water Works won't have wholesale customers. Des Moines Water Works will become a wholesale customer of the regional entity, but we won't have wholesale customers. If regionalization doesn't move forward, the work is primarily done on the rate design. you know, we will be able to move forward with implementation pretty quickly, whatever that date that would be that we choose. And what I mean by pretty quickly is I would not foresee doing a whole redesign. I think we would stick with what we had decided on and move forward with it. Our number one priority related to wholesale rates is to move forward in matching revenue recovery to costs for all of our customers, but in particular for the purchase capacity customers, since they are the ones that are not covering their costs. And we can do that without changing the rate structure. We simply need to increase the volume rate. If you recall, you know, that was actually option one that Tom Beckley from Raftellis presented to us is, you know, here's where you start. If you're not recovering costs, you raise the rates to recover, or you redesign the rate structure. Either way, you can get to full cost recovery. It's simply a matter of choice. Now, as I started with, based off of our estimates of where we think operating expenses, the operating budget will go in the future, and that's based off of past experience, by the way, which you'll hear in the budget presentation that's coming up next, rate increases of 12 to 15% will be required for the purchase capacity customers over the next 3 years to get to that point. So here are the rate increases for 2021 that we're recommending. And since we were just talking about wholesale, I'm going to start with wholesale, even though I'm showing Des Moines and full service first. Well, let's start with purchase capacity. I already said it. It'll take 12 to 15% over 3 years to get there. And so we recommend starting with 15%, at least for 2021, maybe for 2022. We don't have firm numbers. If at the end of the three-year period, we only have to go 12, that'll be great. But what we don't want to do is go on a short end now and have to do a catch-up in 3 years if costs increase more than we're expecting. The WIS storage rate, we are recommending a 3% increase. You'll recall that just as the purchase capacity set of customers, we're under collecting from them, we're actually over collecting from the WIS storage group. So by not adjusting them nearly as much, we'll bring them in line in time, just as we're going to gradually up the purchase capacity rate to cover costs, we're going to gradually edge down the WIS storage cost recovery till it gets to the 100% that we're after.
And Peggy, customers with storage include?
They are primarily Johnston. We actually have one other small customer, and West Des Moines does buy some of their water at the WIS, a specific meter at the WIS storage rate, but it is primarily Johnston. And it is all that, I guess I should add, that rate is also used if purchase capacity customers exceed their capacity in a year, the blended rate that we calculate for their rate for the following year, we're using the WIS storage rate.
I bring that up because you said customers, and the only one I was thinking of was
Johnston.
And we have a lot more wholesale customers.
Absolutely, yeah. So let's talk about Des Moines Inside City. I think you're all aware also, but I'll just remind you that we are also over-collecting from Des Moines Inside City, just as we are from the wholesale WIS storage. You know, it makes sense when we're doing the calculations of 100% cost recovery, if someone's being under-collected, someone's being over-collected. And the two primary ones that are being over-collected are Des Moines Inside City and the wholesale WIS storage. So, but again, just as we're not going to move the purchase capacity customers to 100% collection in 1 year, we're also not going to move the Des Moines Inside City down to 100% collection in just 1 year. We need to stage them and move them in concert so we reach 100% at the same time. In addition, you know, we don't like to do zero rate increases. Amazingly, it's one of those things, it doesn't send a good message to our customers, we don't feel, because, you know, it doesn't portray an accurate picture of what's going on in the utility, and that is that our costs do increase every year. So we recommend a 5% increase. And for our full service customers, we recommend 5% primarily, although a few of them 7%. And so that's why I listed it here, at least in summary form, as 5 to 7%. Because there are a few that are, more under-collected, let me put it that way, as a percentage than others. And while they are small customer groups in and of themselves, we do think it's appropriate, though, if we want to be fair to all customers, that theirs would be slightly higher and not just do 5% across the board for all of our total service customers. We are recommending no increases in the capital improvement fee for Des Moines Inside City customers or in Polk County, but I'm going to talk about Des Moines just for a little bit. I hope you recall that when we talked about implementing a capital improvement fee last year at this time, we talked about wanting to increase it over time. It's 25 cents currently per 1,000 gallons, and likely wanting to increase it to $1 at some point over time. But, we would frankly foresee that as in increments of 25 cents, 25, 50, 75, $1. And so rather than doing that, going from zero to $1 in essence, if you do it by that methodology over just 4 years, we want to spread it out a little bit. So we would recommend no increase for 2021. I did include the structure of the capital improvement fees in the memo because I want to remind you, even though I'm talking about it here in terms of 25 cents per 1,000 gallons, it's actually a declining block. This is one of the, when we first talked about it last year, we had some concerns expressed that for our larger customers, that it would be quite a bit of an increase. And so we went back and redesigned it, and it declines with the same levels of consumption that the the volume rate does. And so I included the structure in the memo, so just as a reminder of what it looks like. That the capital improvement fee as it is at the 25 cents per 1,000 gallons will generate around $1.3 million of capital improvement funds for the city of Des Moines that will be spent only within the city of Des Moines. And so here's a chart. There's a lot of numbers on it. I tried to make it more condensed, but then I didn't feel I showed all the numbers that you needed to see. So I want to focus in on, we've done this before in the past. What does this mean for Des Moines Inside City residential customer, a 4-person household and a 2-person household? And the difference between those two are, we estimate for a 4-person household that they use about 7,500 gallons a month. And for a 2-person household, they use half of that, 3,750 gallons a month. So with these proposed rate increases, the effective rate, the total water charges that a residential customer would be paying in a 4-person household would be $44.93 per month. That's an increase from the current $44.93 in the wrong column, $44.93, an increase of $1.88 a month or 4.2%. And for a 2-person household, they'd be paying, I said that incorrectly up above. I'm on the wrong columns. $46.81 compared to $44.93. For a 2-person household, it's the $26.40 down here compared to the $25.47, an increase of 93 cents, I think, not 94, if I'm doing my math right. Oh, 94 is the capital improvement fee. 93 cents increase, or a 3.7 effective increase. The effective increases are a little bit lower than the 5% I said, because we're not increasing the capital improvement fee or the availability charge. So when you calculate it on a total basis, it brings the impact to the customer down just a little bit. Now, I know the numbers on this are really small. I'm guessing pretty hard to read on your screen, because they're hard to read on my screen, let alone on a shared screen. But this is in page four in your packet. And it's just the summary form that shows the 2020 rates in this column, the 2021 rates that we're proposing, the increased percentages, the increase amounts, and then just showing the capital improvement fees over here to the side. I mentioned in the memo that a couple of our total service customers have already signaled to us that they would like to buy down their rate increases. And what we mean by that is they have city or water district funds, and they would we will calculate for them, and they will basically pay us flat out off the top an amount equal to what the rate increases would be. Amy was actually at Berwick Water District last night, and they do want to do that. And I believe she walked away with a check last night. So, and she'll be working with a couple of others that have at least expressed that interest to us to see whether they really do want to do that or not. And if not, we'll do the rate increases. But if they do, we won't actually do those rate increases. They won't be published and go into effect.
Are they some of the larger ones that we're counting on the regionalization effort, or?
No, it is Berwick, Runnels, and Alleman. Correct, Amy?
Runnels was 5%. It was Alleman, Polk County Rural Water District, and Berwick.
Yeah.
At 7%. And Runnels was just gonna be 5.
But the ones who are interested in the buy down.
Yes, yes. I apologize. Yes. The smaller ones, Sue.
And with that, what questions do you have for me?
I want to be clear. So we are recommending, your recommendation is that we publish and that this take effect in April?
April 1, yes. We had talked about July 1 when we were talking about restructuring the wholesale rate, two reasons, I'm not sure either one is more prevalent, but to give our wholesale customers a bit more notice, first of all, since it would have been a more dramatic change, but also then to align the increase with what for most of them their fiscal year is. But since we're not making a change, we decided we might as well go ahead and stick with our normal April 1 effective date of rate increases. Obviously, it gives us a little bit more revenue by putting the increases into effect a little bit earlier in the year. But we also didn't see the need for the change if we weren't changing the structure.
Can we talk about a fundamental question that you said? I'll tell you, when you said it, it just really didn't sit well with me. When you said we do not like zero increases, I would very much love, as we level this and truly deliver the cost for each of these classes, that if there should be a 0% price increase, I think that's what we should deliver. And I think saying it the other way, that, oh, we're always going to have increases, may not be the case as we look at how we can be more effective and utilize our resources better as a utility. So that just fundamentally maybe requires board discussion, but I didn't like it when you said that, Peggy.
I apologize for that, Sue. My perspective on that is, and absolutely, if there was, if the, in the cost of service study, if there if it worked out that for whatever reason, one class of customers had, in essence, no increase in their costs for whatever reason, due to cost allocations, I wouldn't necessarily say, oh, we need to increase them. I'm simply said that from the perspective of, you know, realistically, we would have to have an enormous amount of operating efficiencies gained to not have an increase in our operating budget. I'm not saying that that isn't possible. I'm just trying to be realistic and deliver a realistic message. When we look at, obviously, wage increases in benefit expenses, and increases in chemicals and power, you know, those things, I'm not going to tell you they always go up, but I'm not sure I recall many occasions in my tenure that they haven't. And so when you have very, very large line items that go up, we would have to just implement some enormous efficiencies on the flip side to actually not have an increase in our operating budget. So that's all I meant by that.
I think as we work to try to build trust, and that is one thing that we have heard from our suburban customers when it comes to how we set our rates, we need to be real careful about being very transparent in how the rates are, how we come about, especially if we're going to a new structure at some point.
I don't disagree at all with that. And again, I'm trying to be transparent in being honest with our customers that costs don't generally go down. We try our best, you know, frankly, to do that, we are probably going to have to short something, and we don't want to take shortcuts. Clean, safe water isn't worth trying to take shortcuts in expenses.
Any other questions or comments on this item?
Yeah, I have a couple questions. Peggy or Ted, how unusual is a increase of 15% for our wholesale purchase capacity customers, or any class of customers, really?
A bit unusual, I'll be honest.
I mean, have we seen increases like that in the past, or is this relatively unprecedented?
To give you an entirely accurate answer, Joel, because I don't remember all of them, I would tell you that, without looking, I would tell you that we have increased wholesale rates at 15% one other time in the past. And over the last couple of years, they've been more in the 10% range. 7 to 10 would be, and 10 is a little high. I would tell you that we would probably want them to be in the 5 to 7 range also, but again, we knew that some of these cost allocation changes were being recommended in Raftellis' cost of service study, so we knew that we would need to be playing some catch up.
I'm just trying to anticipate how guffawed some of the customers might be at this kind of increase, and surely some of them have been paying attention to our discussions and so know it's coming, but
that was
the genesis of my question.
So Joel, I want to say one thing about that, and
please,
it is large. I agree, but I think what we don't want to do is exacerbate the differential that we have in cost recovery.
Right.
And if we go down lower, then somebody's picking up the slack. So you continue then to increase that differential rather than making it up. And I think what Peggy's saying, we're not going to do it all at one time. But there comes a point where if you stretch it out further and come in lower, you're just making it worse.
No disagreement here.
Okay.
Peggy, am I recalling or understanding this right, that raising the wholesale purchase capacity rate without the fixed fee the so that will help with interclass inequity, but not intra-class inequity. Am I following along?
Okay. Yes, you're correct.
This is just me trying to make sure I'm wrapping my head around all of this. Last question, unrelated to those two, well, not directly related. You mentioned that purchase capacity customers paid a infrastructure fee up front, right?
Yes.
But that didn't include maintenance costs?
Correct. It was.
And so was that not built into the fee? I mean, is that not part of, you know, I'm just trying to anticipate that. I'm thinking, you know, what I would argue if I was in their shoes is, hey, you know, we already paid up front. I imagine you've already kind of thought that through. Just
right. No, the
thoughts on that.
When we sold purchase capacity, the amounts that were, the dollars that were collected were intended solely for the construction of infrastructure. And they did not include, you know, any kind of set aside fund or anything like that for ongoing costs. And so certainly we collect, you know, operating costs, obviously through rates, they aren't necessarily, the point of that is if they don't buy any water, they don't pay anything. And we certainly have, you know, you can, it's easy enough to say, well, gee, if you don't buy any water, you shouldn't pay for any chemicals, energy, because you didn't buy any water. That is true. But we also have other costs, you know, associated with the fact that that treatment plant is sitting there. We perform preventive maintenance on it. We actually have, repairs that need to be, you know, capital type repairs that need to be made to keep it going. So if they're not paying any of the costs to maintain that infrastructure that we set aside for them, then someone else has to pay the cost of that infrastructure.
Right, right. They need to pay for the privilege of using it when they need it, even if they're not using it very often.
Exactly, yes.
Do you recall if that was this fact that the fee was just for the assets up front and not for maintenance? Was that well documented at the time? I mean, is that written into the contract or was that more of just an understanding?
I would say it was very well documented because the purchase price, you know, was literally X amount per million gallons. And, you know, that was based off of estimated construction costs for what we were going to construct. So I would believe that should have been pretty clear.
Great.
And we've actually, let me add one thing to that. You know, we've actually, way back when, even provided the, I guess I would say accounting for that from the standpoint of, you know, we collected, don't ask me to remember these numbers exactly, but for the first time around $25 million, and here's what it went to.
Okay. I think you get kind of mulling over here is that we don't want someone to come to us and say, hey, we already paid, maintenance costs were included in what we paid, but sounds like we have strong footing there. So I'm glad to hear
that. I believe so.
Thanks.
Anything else on this item? All I'll say is, I appreciate Diane's comments about kind of the need to, you know, set that schedule and level it out, you know, among those increases. And that's why it does make sense to me in the rationale that you use, Peggy, for the 5% increase for Des Moines, because that too levels it out, right? I mean, if we did a 0% increase now, we're going to have a higher, you know, when we get back in, we're going to have greater swings in increases over time. And so I get what you're doing with the 5% because that gets us going in the direction we're going to need to go, recognizing that our, as you said so well, our costs always increase. So I get that logic. Anything else for anybody on this?
And Peggy, just to reiterate, we will be bringing this to the board for approval in 2 weeks.
Correct.
That's our plan.
Yep.
Very good.
All right. So moving on, Ted, number three is 2021 budget.
Yes. Rates and budget very much aligned with one another. This budget was created based on the assumption that the rates that we just shared will be approved for 2021. Staff has completed the budget. Michelle Holland is going to go through kind of a high level overview of the budget today. And while Michelle specifically and all of finance is very involved, I do want to mention that almost everyone in the utility has some hand, and especially department heads and supervisors and a lot of staff has some hand in preparing the budget. It's a very detailed document. So what Michelle is going to do today is walk us through a very high level overview with some kind of explanation of the budget and some total numbers to give you a sense of where we are. Then at the October board meeting here in 2 weeks, we will come to the board and ask that the board set a public hearing for the November board meeting, which is where at that public hearing we'll consider the budget and ultimately approve. But before that, at the November Finance and Audit Committee, the second Tuesday of next month, we will have the brief department presentations that you've seen in the past, where we'll talk a little bit about what's happening in each department and what's different. So you have a sense of what changed, which I always find to be helpful in terms of year over year budgeting, is not so much the amount, but what has changed from the prior year. Those will be important because there are a couple of additions to staff in this budget. And we'll hear a little bit about that, but we'll hear more about it at the next finance and audit. We don't add to staff often and we don't do it lightly, but we're adding a couple of maintenance positions or a couple of positions in the maintenance areas, one in distribution and one in production, or we're proposing that anyway, and a half of admin here in the office area. So that's something that you can listen for and look for in Michelle's presentation. And then again, in a month, we'll hear a little bit more about that. But with that as our path for the next month, let's start with Michelle and kind of our overview of the 2021 budget.
All right, so I actually have two questions. First of all, can you all hear me?
Yes, we can.
I have taken myself off of mute, so that's a good thing. And then can you also, I've tried to share my screen, do you all see the 2021 budget slide?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay, well, since I got those two things done, that's half the ball game right there. So let's jump right in. I think the term budget kind of tends to, I don't know, stir up some emotions in a lot of people, like, ugh, not a budget. So anyway, just wanted to start with defining a budget, an estimation of revenue and expenses. And we will go over those in a little bit more detail throughout this presentation. Over a specified future period of time, what we're talking about today is the 2021 calendar year budget, accumulated and reviewed on a periodic basis. Certainly as part of your board materials are monthly financial statements that show actual results compared to the annual budget. And then it's a compilation of assumptions, estimations, and reliance on financial information and other relevant data. And compiling all of this resulted in a 33-page budget memo that I believe you all have received. So as we talked about estimations, one of the first assumptions that we make in the budget process is the annual pumpage number. And for the 2021 budget, we are budgeting 17.1 billion gallons of pumpage. The past several years budget, we've budgeted 17.0 billion gallons. And as you can see from this chart showing the past 5 years of pumpage, our average is right around 17.2 billion gallons. So, you know, certainly the past few years have been pretty good, but certainly in the rearview mirror, but still stings a little bit is that 2015, where we had a pretty low pumpage year. So again, we are budgeting pretty close to the average of 17.1 billion gallons. What this annual pumpage number does is then we allocate that to a billed consumption number. And we bill approximately 90% of our annual pumpage. That 10% is made up of things like firefighting, lost water and main breaks, free water to the city of Des Moines, things like that. So we bill 90% of our pumpage. We then allocate that among the different service areas. We apply the water rates, and then that comes up with our annual revenue number. Another thing that we do when we budget that pumpage number of the 17.1 billion gallons, we allocate that to the different treatment plants, to the three treatment plants. So for 2021, we're budgeting that Fluor will produce 10.1 billion gallons, McMullen will produce 4.8 billion gallons, and the Sailorville Water Treatment Plant producing 2.2 billion gallons. From those overall numbers, we then push down into the chemical expense, energy expense, and residual expense that we will budget for that year. If you have your budget memo handy, I'm gonna direct—
Can I ask a question? Can you go back to the last one? So budgeting, for the chemicals and energy and residual, that differs from plant to plant, depending on the methodology or the treatment?
Yes, now you're asking a finance person about treatment, but I can say, you know, the Sailorville Water Treatment Plant has an entirely different process of treating water that doesn't use any residuals. So as you can see, there's no residual removal at that treatment plant. Although that is a higher energy using plant, I believe. So the cost per 1,000 gallons produced on the energy side is a little higher. So,
okay. All right. Thanks.
Yep. Hopefully I did okay, engineers in the room.
Home run, Michelle.
All right. So anyway, if you had your budget memo with you, I direct you to page 5. This personally is my favorite page of this. It has all of the numbers on it. So a couple of things I wanted to point out here are that we show the 2021 proposed budget, and we are comparing that to the 2020 approved budget. So we're comparing that to the current year budget. The top section would be the revenue and the additional funding. Those are the inflows, if you will. And that totals about $80.1 million in the 2021 budget. The next section would be the expenses, the operating expenses, the capital expenses, the debt service obligation, and the operating reserves. Those are the total outflows of the budget. Again, about $80.1 million. So what you have in front of you is a balanced budget. So we're gonna go through these sections fairly quickly, but just to kick off the main sections on here. The first section, the revenue section. As you can see, water sales makes up about 90% of our total revenue. And again, this is based on the billed consumption numbers that we produce, as well as those water rates, of which Peggy talked about in the rate presentation a few minutes ago. About 90% there. We also have revenue, debt service revenue. That's the cash inflow from those customers that participated in our bond issue. We actually receive that money as revenue, and then we actually pay it out as part of our debt service obligation. So that's pretty much an in and an out, a wash. Other sales and services, this is our department revenue. It's about $2.9, nearly $3 million. This is made up of such things as like lab fees, operation and maintenance costs associated with our remote facilities like LP Moon, Polk County Pump Station, to name a few. Billing service revenue, about $1.9 million. This is the billing and collecting fees that we receive from several cities, primarily City of Des Moines. But it also includes revenue from HomeServe, billing, collecting revenue. And then we have other revenues at about $1.3 million. That would be connection fees, penalties, land and building lease revenues, as well as interest income. Next section down, whoops, actually on page 5 would be the additional funding section. For the 2021 budget, that's about nearly $2.9 million. First item on this list would be the capital carryover. Our capital projects don't actually follow a capital year. They're not nicely done and finished by December 31st. Certainly, we do have capital projects that will carry over into the following year. So about $2.7 million that was budgeted basically in 2020 that will not be done in 2020 that will be carried over into the 2021 budget. We have a small amount of some plan review income, as well as we have a pretty small amount in the upcoming budget for other projects funded by outside entities. We've had some pretty large projects going on lately, as you can see in the 2020 budget. These would include like booster stations, feeder mains. Participants have included Norwalk, Polk City, all of that sort of thing. The 2021 budget just has some labor in finishing up those few projects. So that gives us a total revenue and additional funding, again, of the $80.1 million. Continuing down on this page, we'll actually start on the operating expense. We spend quite a bit of time in this section. The total operating budget proposed for 2021 is about $50.7 million. That's about a $2.2 million increase over the 2020 budget, which equates to about 4.5%. I know Peggy mentioned the 5% in her rate memo, and so in her rate presentation. So we're showing right now a 4.5% increase over the last year's budget. There are several pages in this memo that are devoted to talking about what's in these categories and then comparisons to the current year. Of this $2.2 million change between the two budgets, I can really summarize those into three things, three highlights, if you will. Labor, about $900,000. The bulk of that is the wage rate increase that's specified in the union contract. And then, as Ted also mentioned, this budget includes an additional headcount of about 2.5 full-time equivalents. And again, that would be a half a position as an admin position, one position in water production, and one position in water distribution. The second of the three would be the benefits budget, going up about $440,000. Certainly, as wages increase, so do the benefits that are tied to wages. IPERS, for example, deferred comp match, the FICA, the Medicare and Social Security. So those are going up as wages go up. And then the other pretty large item in here in the benefits budget is the Des Moines Water Works contribution for medical premiums. The 2020 budget, which is the budget we're in right now, included the normal or recurring increase in the cost Des Moines Water Works would pay for medical insurance. This is within the union contract. It is $20 for single and $50 for family. Now, you may recall when we were in the fall of last year, those medical premium costs came in pretty unfavorable, and the board approved late last year, I believe in November, to increase that monthly contribution by the utility by an additional $100 for single and $150 for family. Okay, so then the 2021 budget includes the normal recurring increase, the one that's defined in the union contract, of $20 and $50 over the current rate. So that includes that extra contribution. So from a budget to budget perspective, that's a pretty good size increase. Then the third thing I wanted to highlight of the three would be the purchase services going up about $650,000. Included in the 2021 budget are two fairly large engineering studies, one of which $150,000 of consulting expenses for a study for a plant expansion, and then $400,000 consulting for a groundwater study. Again, both engineering studies. The pilot is budgeted to increase $128,000, and the 2021 budget includes $100,000 for a facilitated strategic plan. The next slide shows where we've been the last 5 years on operating budget increases. And as you can see, 2.5 up to 6.2, 4.5 that we're proposing for next year is right in line with this, and also kind of goes to that overall-ish 5% average. What I wanted to show you on the operating expense budget here is, you know, labor and benefits make up over 50% of our operating budget. So certainly a big part of our operation is labor and benefits. Chemicals, residual removal, and utilities, basically the next three pieces of pie, about 20-22%-ish, you know, those are our treatment expenses to treat the water. Purchase services, about $7.5 million. Again, that includes the pilot. It includes those engineering studies that I just talked about. It also includes such things like IT maintenance contracts to keep all of our systems going, as well as services for plant maintenance and things like that. Materials and equipment, about $3.7 million. These are all of the parts and supplies that are used in all aspects of the utility. The plant, the remote sites, our lab supplies, our vehicle parts, our parts for, you know, building maintenance, things like that. And then rounding out operating expenses would be that corporate insurance piece and then other expenses. Continuing down on page 5 would be the capital expense budget. And the 2021 capital budget is currently at $24.5 million, of which there's that small amount funded by other entities, those joint projects. Again, those are just, most of those are finishing up, so just a small amount of labor for 2021. $2.7 million of carryover, which really tells us that funded by the current year's utility revenue, $21.7 million in capital. For comparison purposes, what we had in the 2020 budget was $19.5 million. So, you know, as you've heard and seen probably in many months of board meetings, as well as the five-year CIP that we do have a large need for capital improvement. And, you know, we're happy that we're able to, you know, budget more in the capital line item. Next chart just shows quickly, you know, where's this capital being budgeted. The top section are the engineering driven projects. So water main replacement, $7.3 million. This would include main replacement in Des Moines, Pleasant Hill, and the unincorporated Polk County service area. We have several projects included in the Fluor Drive treatment plant to upgrade a lot of those assets. Facility management, some projects within here would be upgrading the Des Moines River intake, providing additional funds for interior and exterior paint at the Wilczynski standpipe, as well as additional funds for a new ground shop to be located on the other side of George Flag. Then we have some other engineering-led initiatives, raw water at Maffitt projects, projects at the Sailorville Water Treatment Plant, and then some others within that group. Then we have our departmental capital. These would be basically non-engineering capital. And primarily these are recurring capital needs. You know, in IT they're, you know, servers or computers, things like that, hardware, software, things like that. Distribution, it would include valves and hydrant replacement, water production, the parts, pieces, pumps, motors, things like that, replacing those. That also includes our vehicle replacement budget. And then customer service, primarily meters and MTUs. One note that I did want to share here on the engineering capital, this chart is also in your budget memo. It's on page 13. And the other engineering capital in that memo is incorrect. It really is this $990,000, and that will be corrected for when you all receive this memo for the October board meeting. Continuing down on page 5, after the capital expenditures would be those debt service obligations. Certainly we have the income that we talked about above from the participants in the debt service. We then pay that out along with our Des Moines Water Works obligation for our bonds. And then we also have $500,000 in addition to the operating reserves. As our operating expenses go up, so does the need to increase those operating reserves. They say a picture tells a thousand words, and what this chart here really says is it takes all of those numbers that were on page 5, summarizes them for the past 5 years, and shows kind of where things are trending. So a couple of things I wanted to point out. The blue are the operating expenses, and as you can see, a pretty slow and steady increase in our operating expenses. The green section would be Des Moines Water Works capital, again, increasing at a little bit larger rate, thankfully, through the past 5 years. The debt and reserves, again, just kind of trickling up through as we pay the bonds, as well as increase those operating reserves. And then the orange is that outside funded capital. And as you can see, that varies from year to year. Those are those joint projects, the booster stations, the feeder mains. I do believe this 2018 number, pretty large number, was Park Foundation project. So before I wrapped up, you know, everything else, since labor and benefits are such a large part of our operation, I wanted to spend just a few minutes going over that and the different pieces of that. So what this shows is operating labor at about $16.7 million. Capital labor is about $2 million. We do have, employees do charge their time to capital projects if they're working on capital projects. That's primarily engineering staff, although it does include some water production and water distribution. And then here's a list of what our benefits are. Employee medical being the large piece of that, and certainly what we talked about for the increases there. We have retiree medical, and we have life, long-term disability, accidental death and dismemberment, making up our insurance premium part. Then we have what I would call retirement expenses. We have the employer contribution to IPERS, 9.44%. We have the FICA taxes, the Medicare and Social Security taxes. We have the contribution to the Des Moines Water Works pension. Just because we do have a frozen plan with the pension, we are still required to make a contribution every year. And that number becomes what is the actuarial defined contribution, which principal works up. We have the deferred comp match. Then we have a couple other little things, flex dollars and car allowance to finish out the benefits budget. So the total benefits budget for 2021 is about $9.3 million, which is about 50% of labor, which is pretty much where it's been tracking the past several years. Budgeted staffing by year. This also shows the last 5 years of staffing. And again, as Ted mentioned, a half of a position in the OCEO department. Water distribution, an increase of 1, and then water production, an increase of 1, for a total of 2.5. There's a little bit of rounding here as we have adjusted some hours for some of those seasonal positions. And the last slide I wanted to share would be staffing by department. And as you can see, in the water production and water distribution department, makes up about 55% of our labor costs are in those two departments. Customer service includes our field customer service as well as our main office staff. We have the engineering department. We have the office of the chief operating officer, say that 5 times quickly, which includes our grounds and safety department. And then we have what I would call our admin departments, basically finance, IT, HR, and the OCEO. That was all that I had in the presentation today. Any questions for me? Did I put everyone to sleep?
Nice presentation, thank you.
No. Yes.
Just a comment, Ted, I was glad to see strategic planning had a place in the budget, so glad to
see
it.
Yeah, Joel, I'm glad to see that too, frankly. I think it's something we need to do I'll mention, I see Jen is here. She's already digging into that for me on day 4. So we're on the right path.
She's a real slacker, isn't she?
Yeah. She's keeping me busy, that's for sure. Well, a lot of numbers there. Graham, I don't know that there's anything else. If there are any other questions, the path forward here, as we've already said, is we will come to the board and at the board meeting in 2 weeks, asking permission or asking the board to set a public hearing. We will come to the board in a month to share those individual department presentations at finance and audit to give you a little bit more specific. We'll all have more budget than we need, I suppose, by the end of all of this. But then at the November board meeting, hopefully we will approve the budget. So any questions? I know there's a lot there. It's a lot to absorb. There'll be more opportunities for questions.
Hearing none, I don't think there are any. Ted, do you have anything to add today for my CEO?
You know, I think we've already inferred it, but Jennifer Terry has returned to the waterworks. I think the board was aware she did start. This is day four. We're glad she's back. She's working on a lot of things.
And welcome back, Jen.
And other than that, I think given the hour, I will end my comments.
Great. The only thing that I'll add is Ted and I discussed the RFP for legal services, and I just moved that, asked that just be put on the board agenda and didn't include it in today's agenda because today's agenda was weighty. So if you were looking for that, there'll be a time to discuss and review that at the board meeting.
Yes.
So anything else for the good of the cause? Anybody have a couple of cents to add? Hearing none, Jen, welcome back. We'll see everybody in a couple of weeks.
Very good. Thank you all.
It's great to be back, Graham.